Hi, it's Peter Schiff. This is Friday, July 24th, 2009. Well, the rally in global stock markets that continued this week, the Dow is now above 9,000. Of course, the Dow's nominal gains are being partially offset by the weakness of the dollar. The dollar continues to fall, although not sharply. It's kind of melting away little by little. The dollar index closed the week below 79. I think this is the lowest weekly close of this move. Also, though, if you look at the rise in U.S. stocks and compare it to what's going on overseas, U.S. stocks are moving very slowly. I mean, the emerging markets are the strongest, but even other developed markets are outpacing the U.S. market, particularly when you factor in the foreign exchange. You know, I wrote down some figures on the U.S. market versus the Hang Seng, just to take a look at that. And, you know, in 2008, when we had the big drop in the markets, the Dow dropped about 55% from peak to trough in 2008. But the Hang Seng dropped 67%, closer to 70%. And at that time, I was getting a lot of flack from people who were criticizing my investment strategy because they were pointing out that the foreign markets that I was advising people to buy actually did worse than the domestic markets. And they thought that there was some poetic justice there because I was telling people to be careful of the U.S. market, that there was a financial crisis coming. And I advised people to move into foreign stocks. And of course, foreign stocks did even worse as the crisis first began to materialize. And I reminded people that I thought that was a short-term effect, that it wouldn't last, that soon there would be a reversal both in the dollar and foreign markets. And if you look at where the situation is today, the decline from the 2008 high for the Dow and the Hang Seng are now identical. Both markets are down 37%. And I think if the rallies continue, and it looks like they might, I mean, the Dow might get up to 10,000 or even a little higher. I think if that happens, you'll still see a move in the Hang Seng more than twice as great by percentage terms. And I think the Hang Seng market will be much closer to its 2008 high than the Dow. And, you know, if you take a perspective, the Hang Seng, in order to get to where it is now, has rallied 88% since its low in last year, whereas the Dow has only rallied 40%, actually about 37% from its low. So we've had a rally twice as much in the Hang Seng, but because the market dropped so much more, it needed to rally twice as much just to get back to where it was. But if you take a look at a longer move, to put it in perspective, if you go back to the beginning of the last bull run, which really started off the 2003 lows, if you look at where the market is now, take a look at the Dow relative to where it was 6 years ago, and the Dow is up, I wrote it down, 23% over the past 6 years. That's an average rate of increase of 4% a year. That doesn't count the dividends, which were not that high, but obviously, you know, it's probably significant relative to a measly 4% a year. But if you contrast that to the Hang Seng is up 140% in the last 6 years. That's an average of, what, 23% per year. And of course, the dividend on the Hang Seng is more than twice the dividend of the Dow. So when you throw the dividend yield in, you get an even bigger outperformance. So anybody that's had a long-term perspective that has been investing in foreign stocks for a longer period of time, they're much better off than people who have invested in the U.S. market, even if they had to ride out a steeper correction in 2008. And I think that the Hang Seng and other markets, particularly Chinese markets, will end up making new all-time record highs long before the Dow ever manages to make a new record high. And of course, by the time the Dow does make a record high in nominal terms, in real terms rather, it will be nowhere near because of the amount of inflation. Also, in some of the news that we got out of the markets, you know, if you look at the earnings news, like the news came out today on American Express, also Capital One, their earnings continue to disappoint. Their stocks are down. You know, so if you break out the financials between the legitimate banks that are actually making loans to businesses, loans to consumers, operating like banks, their earnings are terrible. But if you look at the investment banks that are run like hedge funds, like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan, they're making a lot of money. But why are they making money? They're making money because they're borrowing a lot of cheap money from the Federal Reserve and gambling in the stock market. You know, they're also making money because the U.S. government is issuing a record amount of debt And they're issuing this debt through companies like Goldman Sachs, which charge a fee or commission for their services. So as the government plunges the rest of us into debt, a few of their favorite banker friends on Wall Street make out like bandits. And of course, you know, I'm sure all the high-risk gambling that's going on Wall Street again with all this government money, eventually these bets are going to blow up, and of course there's going to be more bailout money for these companies. But, you know, that's just going to be the taxpayers' problem. Now, talking about taxpayer problems, I watched a little bit of the testimony again today where Ben Bernanke and Geithner were testifying on the problems at Freddie and Fannie. And Geithner, I saw him admit that the government made a mistake with respect to Freddie and Fannie. And he regretted that they hadn't discovered that mistake sooner in time to prevent the problem. Well, they might have neglected to discover it, but other people did, including myself. In Crash Proof, which came out in early 2007, I wrote extensively about how Fannie and Freddie were contributing to the housing bubble, how they, in fact, blew the initial air into that bubble and kept it going. And I wrote about how they were going to go bankrupt and what that was going to mean for the country. But I was writing about that long before that book came out. I was writing long articles pointing out the moral hazards of Freddie and Fannie and the problems that they were creating back in 2003 and 2004. And there were other people that were warning about it. So it's not that the government didn't have warning. Even Alan Greenspan, in some of his testimonies, warned about the problems at Freddie and Fannie. So it wasn't like Congress wasn't warned. They just didn't care because they didn't want to rain on the parade. They wanted housing prices to keep going up. They wanted their constituents to think they were getting rich. They didn't want to take the necessary steps because politicians will never trade short-term pain for long-term gain. That is the flaw. And of course, Geithner is saying that we need a new way to regulate Fannie and Freddie so that we don't have the problems. Well, that's impossible. You can't do it. What we need to do is dismantle a Freddie and Fannie. The government should not be in the business of guaranteeing mortgages. Mortgage credit needs to be distributed based on the creditworthiness of the individual borrower. The minute you have the government coming in and guaranteeing the mortgage, that distorts the market. That enables Americans to borrow more money than they ordinarily would be able to borrow. And it contributes to home prices being artificially high. And that is probably a problem. You know, the initial mission of Fannie and Freddie was to help make housing more affordable. But they actually ended up making housing less affordable by using cheap credit to drive up prices. Now, that benefited home builders who were building houses and selling them for an extra profit. And of course, that benefited existing homeowners who wanted to sell their homes. But it did nothing to benefit homeowners who wanted to stay in their homes. And it certainly didn't benefit new homeowners who were looking to buy homes because they had to go deep into debt to do it. And now we're all suffering from that. The reality is what we should have learned from the failures of Fannie and Freddie is that our government is incompetent, that they can't figure things out and they're never going to. They're always only going to act in their own political interests. They're never going to do the right thing if the right thing jeopardizes their re-election. And their re-election always hinges on the voters feeling good, even if it's false, even if it's phony. Even if they know it's going to end in disaster, the politicians don't care. They continuously repeat these mistakes. So these hearings are a farce. It's obvious, you know, Geithner makes it out like, you know, we didn't know that this was coming, that nobody could have figured it out. It was obvious. It was obvious to anybody who could look at it that you had Freddie and Fannie guaranteeing half the mortgages in this country, and it was going to be a disaster. But now, since the bursting of the housing bubble, the government has given them more powers as it's taken them over. Now they're guaranteeing something like 75 or 80% of the mortgages. So they took a gigantic problem and made it worse by bailing out Freddie and Fannie. Why didn't the government just let them go bankrupt? Why didn't the government just let people who bought mortgage-backed securities guaranteed by Freddie and Fannie lose money? There would have been more short-term pain, but we would have been much further on the road to recovery and having a legitimate housing market where the government is out of the picture and home prices and mortgage credit is determined by market forces, by real supply and demand, and by genuine creditworthiness, not by government gimmicks. Anyway, that's it for today. I'm off for a hit on CNBC. That's it for everybody. I'll be back again next week. So long.